Page 7.
Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. In this program, we're going to expose and hopefully effectively condemn the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, I'm going to make an attempt to explain why these things are happening and what it means to you and your family. Then, during the second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through His Torah. We're currently in the midst of considering the creation account from God's perspective. If you're rational, I assure you this will be the best part of today's program, certainly the most beneficial. Our phone number, should you wish to engage in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. As the program in the first hour came to a close yesterday, we're in the midst of a story about a woman who was married in the Middle East, read Muslim world, probably in Pakistan, and how her husband was now raping her and assaulting her with a knife. And we're going to return to that story in just a moment, but there was a quiet little item in the news that probably wasn't picked up by in any major newspaper, probably wasn't picked up on any electronic media in terms of the mainstream television stations. But it's still something that you should be aware of. The United States yesterday suspended all training of Afghanis, whether they be Afghani army or Afghani police. We stopped. Now, the reason we stopped is because Afghanis have become the primary killer of American troops. And the number of Americans who have died in Afghanistan has increased rapidly over the past 3 years. In fact, we've lost more American soldiers in the last 2 years, 2.5 years in Afghanistan, than we lost in all of the 9 years preceding it. And the primary killer now are those very Afghanis that America is equipping with guns. But just think of this for a moment. Not only does that mean that the alleged plan, which was to leave Afghanistan the same way we left Vietnam, by arming Vietnamese, and in this case now arming Afghanis. In Vietnam, of course, it did not work. The moment we left, the real zealots, the religious zealots, the communists, overran the people that we had seduced to carry guns for money. And in Afghanistan, the same thing will happen. They will be immediately overrun. And in Vietnam, it meant that all of the guns and weapons that we had left behind for the South Vietnamese were confiscated by the North, the communists. In this case, the Taliban will have possession of all of the weapons that we left behind and therefore be infinitely better empowered with weaponry than they were before we invaded. In other words, we will have made a very bad situation much worse. And we will have done so heedless, ignorant of the lessons of Vietnam. But just think of it in a global sense. How in the world is it that people have been conditioned to the point that they believe that peace comes from weapons? And that's the big sale of the U.S. military. It's why, you know, Americans don't bristle at the fact that the U.S. spends more on spying and the military than every other nation on earth combined. There's this myth that they are protecting our freedom. Militaries and weapons don't do that. You know, it's a fact, too, that when a nation militarily has the ability to dispatch a force, to send a force outside of its own homeland, as the United States does. In fact, we base none of our military, in fact, by law, we can't base our military on our borders to protect and defend America. But the very ability to extend a force almost universally leads to that nation doing so. You look at Rome. They had the ability. They built the roads. They had the legions. They used them, and they conquered much of the world, savaging it. You look at the Persians. They did the same thing. The Assyrians and Babylonians before them. The Egyptians before them. More recently, you look at Great Britain and Spain. When they had the armadas and could extend the force, they did. And they were savages. And now America has the military capability of extending a force through both its battle groups and aircraft carriers, and now its drones, and we do so regularly. It is one of the reasons that rather than our national military making us safer, making us more peaceful, they're actually putting America at greater risk. Same thing is true with Afghanistan. We're arming the beast. We have made a bad situation worse. We are now suspending what we had previously done, but we will resume because myths are what people believe. Whether they're military myths, or patriotic myths, political myths, or religious myths. Because most people are unaware, because they are no longer rational. They believe the myths, and we will resume. And we will claim to have attained peace in Afghanistan by weaponizing Afghanistan, sacrificing both blood and coin in the process. Now, I'd like to return to the story that we were considering at the end of our news hour yesterday. If you recall, Zara, who was married in the Middle East, we'll assume Pakistan. She shortly thereafter, she and her husband, along with their two children, moved to Britain for work because there is no economic hope. There is no economic prosperity in worlds poisoned by Islam. And it's universal, the reason that exists. And it's existed right from the beginning, you know, with Muhammad's goons, the first Muslims who were militants. They did not work. They stole the wealth of others. And it's because of the moral decadence that exists in Islam. It goes right to the root, right to the wannabe God, Allah, the lone prophet. They're despicable. They morally bankrupt. And in a morally bankrupt society where the value system is upside down, as it is in Islam, where good is bad and bad is good, there is no hope. There is no economic prosperity. And so they moved to Britain. There, her husband became violent, routinely holding a knife to her throat. He started raping me, she said, which affected me mentally. And this is an interesting statement that she made, creating lots of stress in the relationship between me and my sons. Isn't that interesting? That her sons, poisoned also by Islam, when the mother would cry out and say, you know, your father is raping me, rather than siding with their mom, they sided with their father and still are. Because, again, the moral decadence of Islam is upside down. In Islam, when a woman is raped, she goes to jail because she committed adultery. And if she's unmarried, then it's illicit sexual act. A lewd sexual act. She goes to jail, often for very long sentences, and the man is exonerated. Then she said that I couldn't speak out beyond my family because I learned that to speak out against your husband to anyone outside, and which she did not say is outside of Islam, is a big shame. In Islam, women have no rights. And the shame is that husbands, mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters are honor-bound, according to this perverse religion, to kill their daughter, their sister, their wife, if she doesn't comply with the terms and conditions of Islam, which are total surrender to men. Men have the right to abuse women in Islam. That's Muhammad's farewell sermon. You know, the Quran is full of proofs, according to Muhammad, that women are essentially worthless. And then Muhammad summed it all up in his farewell sermon, where he told men that it is appropriate and that Allah gives them permission to abuse their wives, to treat them like animals, to beat them, to starve them, to do whatever they wish to do with them. And the Quran clearly indicates that men can testify against their wives and send them away, even kill them. But women cannot do so against their husbands. So she said, I was struggling between Eastern culture and what I learned and Western culture, where I should live with freedom, with equality and justice. I found it difficult. This CNN reporter was way too ignorant to then correct that statement and said, hey, the problem here is the Islamic culture and a culture that is either derived from Christianity or socialist secular humanism. And the differences between those cultures. But no, this journalist was way too ignorant. In fact, this journalist, at the end of the story, will make an apology on behalf of Islam as opposed to hold Islam accountable. No judgment. An inability to be moral. This article goes on. During her marriage, the violence continued. She showed CNN police reports she eventually filed, but she decided not to pursue. She decided to ask for a divorce. I told him, I want a divorce. That is all I want, is a divorce and a relationship with my sons. Well, she said her husband, of course, initially agreed. That's the nature of Islam. You deceive your prey to make them an easier victim. But then he insisted on going back to their home in the Middle East to explain it to their families. So he gathered all of his family in his house. He says, I was shocked to see 60 or 70 people at his house. This is, I am assuming, in Pakistan. His mother called me a very bad name. She called me a prostitute in front of my sons. I remember, this is a quote, when my mother-in-law looked me in the face and held my sons in her big hands, she told me, my mother is a doctor. You should hold your head up. Who are you to do this to my son? Who are you? After that, she told me, I will look after them. You don't deserve to be a mother. Why? Because you should accept being raped and being brutalized and being attacked with a knife. And just accept it, because that is your role in Islam. This mother said to her daughter-in-law, I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
Seven.
Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. Our number, should you wish to engage in this conversation, is 877-300-7645. Now, just imagine this. This is the thing that I confront all the time with Islam. And the reason I say I confront is that I've written the most comprehensive presentation of the Islamic scriptures, the best documented, most chronological, most contextual presentation of the five Islamic sources. It's a 1,000-page review of Islam called Prophet of Doom. It exposes and condemns the religion using Muhammad's own words. And as a result of offering that book free, HTML, PDF, and MP3, should you wish to go to prophetofdoom.net, I received tens of thousands of emails from Muslims, many of them angry that I would expose and condemn their religion. And the most belligerent Muslims are almost always women. And that is what is happening here. This woman who raised a man to be a boy to be a beast. A woman who raised her son to be a Muslim. He became a rapist. He became vicious, assaulting his wife with a knife routinely, beating her. And this woman said that you do not deserve to be a mother. Think of that. The woman who raised an animal, a savage, who is attacking this poor innocent woman, tells the innocent woman, her daughter-in-law, that she does not deserve to be a mother. after it was she who raised her son as a Muslim and turned him into an animal. Well, then Zara says her husband issued a death sentence. Yes, this mother's son issued a death sentence, calling her father in the neighboring town, demanding that he murder his own daughter for dishonoring her family. It would be an honor murder. He told my father, if you were a man, if you were a Muslim, clean your shame. If you were a man, kill your daughter. Her sister warned her not to return home. She called her father to hear his voice one last time. He told me, I miss you. I want to see you. He didn't tell me what he had heard from my husband about ordering my death. He said, come, I want to protect you. Zara was ready to flee home, but she decided to see her father one last time, even though she knew it might be a trap. A part of her says that she almost wished for death. I felt like rubbish. I wanted to die. I wanted to disappear because I didn't want my father or my brother or my cousin to kill me. My son will carry my shame. Imagine that. She did nothing wrong. It's the nature of Islam. Good is bad. Bad is good. That which we would consider, any rational, moral person would consider appropriate, is the inverse of that in Islam. My father told my mother, she didn't do anything to her husband. But the problem is, nonetheless, because of Islam, she brought shame on us. Shame that cannot even be cleansed by blood. We can't cleanse the shame that she has brought on us. She, not him. Not the husband that called the father and said, murder your daughter. The very woman that I have raped, that I have assaulted with a knife. Kill her. Faced with this impossible choice. Imagine this, an impossible choice. Zara says her father realized he had no alternative. My father sent me away because he knew that I would be killed by either my uncles, my cousins, or by himself. There was no other option. He had to get rid of the shame because I brought this shame upon my family by my stupidity. That was my crime, she said. How was it her fault? She didn't like being raped. That was her fault. She didn't like her husband assaulting her with a knife. That was her fault. She wanted to leave this man and get a divorce. That was her fault. Only in Islam. So Zara's father banished her from the home in the Middle East and sent her back to Britain. Meanwhile, Zara's husband filed for divorce in the Sharia court in the couple's hometown. That meant that she was separated from her children and without her knowledge or consent. Much of Zara's story is hard to verify, so says CNN, because the court documents and the applications for asylum are private. But Zara's caseworkers with a British woman's aid agency says that we cannot speak to the husband. Getting a response for it would trigger a violent reaction from him. We will return to this story and its conclusion after the break. I am Yatta. This is Shattering Myths. Discussion 877-300-7645. Well, the story continues and concludes with Zara, obviously, has not returned to the Middle East. By the way, that's not her real name. She couldn't use her real name because Muslims will kill her. Has not returned to the Middle East. Should read Pakistan, since having left 5 years ago. When she left, her sister wrote her a letter imploring her never to return. It says, it will be your grave if you were to visit your father and mother. In other words, that her father and mother would kill her. Zara has now gained residency in Britain and has chosen to leave Islam. a decision that has completely cut her off from her children, who are now in their late teens. In Islam, if you don't please your husband, no matter how abusive your husband is to you, if you don't, even in Islam, if you're not willing to prostitute yourself to earn money for your husband, and you speak out against him, it is a death sentence. Well, the ultimate death sentence in Islam is to leave the religion. The fourth surah says, if a Muslim recants their faith, kill them. And so now she would be a victim, and she would be killed by any good Muslim, regardless of whether or not they know her story. When she last spoke to her family, she learned that her sons wanted nothing to do with her, that her sons rejected her. They don't even want to hear their voice. It's like they got, she says, it's like I got divorced from my children. She says, I don't know, I'm tired. I'm tired of culture. I'm tired of religion. I'm tired of being a woman. I'm tired of being a mother. We all ought to be tired of religion. It is religion that created this culture. It is the religion of Islam that made being a woman so miserable. And yet it was the most vicious person in this whole cycle was the mother of the beast. Zara says she does not hate her husband or her own relatives, even though they all want to kill her. She sees them all as victims, and indeed they are, like her, of a brutal, unrelenting, now this is the CNN journalist, tradition. Now this is not in quotes, this is the journalist changing what she said so that he or she comes across as politically correct. This is not in quotes. He changed it, or she changed it, to an unrelenting tradition, not to an unrelenting religion, which is what she said. She realized that it was Islam that had caused this. That's why she rejected Islam. That's why she was no longer a Muslim. She told the journalist this, and yet he or she could not process it. And listen to this last line by this moron who writes for CNN. One that leading Muslim thinkers insist has no place in Islam. Leading Muslim thinkers have no place in Islam. The opposite is true. All one had to do is acquaint themselves with the Quran, read it, and that's what they would find. All they have to do is read the Hadith, which is the oral reports from Muhammad and his companions, and that's what they would find. All they have to do is read Sharia law, and they would find evidence that is overwhelming that this is exactly what Islam dictates. And yet this moronic journalist ends this article, which is all about the abuse of Islam, by saying, oh, but Muslim thinkers insist that it has no place in Islam. In my view, the CNN journalist who wrote this story is worse than the mother that gave birth to the beast, worse than the beast who assaulted and raped his wife and then called for her murder. When we deceive in this way, when we exonerate the actual cause in this way, then we are merciless. Being a tolerant, as political correctness dictates, of that which is intolerant is merciless. You create the environment where such a merciless, uncivilized religion can continue to poison other beasts. There is nothing you can do that is more immoral or more vicious than what the CNN reporter did. Don't make that same mistake. Come to know the truth. Have the conviction and backbone to take the moral stand against such ruthless, sexist, violent, immoral doctrines like Islam. Now, there's an interesting story. Now, this is quite a change from repulsiveness to a very telling transition in our society, particularly as we move towards the tribulation, which is now only a matter of 12 years away. I should say 14 years away. Sorry, I misspoke. 2026 is when we'll begin the tribulation. And where religion will both be embraced, it will be both foe and ally, and it will be twisted so that all religions amalgamize into one, that coexist bumper sticker that is the antithesis of the Shattering Myths program logo. They will be amalgamized into to one. Well, that's what you're seeing here. It is a very interesting story out of the European Union. It's brought to us by the BBC. Now, these are four Christian women, men and women, who were discriminated against. And as you know, I am not a fan of Christianity. I'm opposed to the religion. But still, the story is interesting. It reads, four British Christians who claim they lost their jobs as a result of discrimination against their beliefs are taking their cases to a European Court of Human Rights. Now, there's no question, all four of these people were fired because of their religious beliefs. That isn't the question. The question is, and that's why this article's opening statement is interesting, the question is, did the employers do the right thing? Did they have the right, and should they have fired the Christians? It's not whether or not they lost their jobs as a result of discrimination against their beliefs. That is absolutely true. The cases involve British Airways check-in clerk Nadia Iwinda, nurse Shirley Chaplin, relationship counselor Gary McFarlane, and registrar Lillian Liddell. Miss Iwada, who is a Pentecostal Christian from Twickenham in West London, was sent home by her employer. She was fired by her employer, British Airways, in 2006 for refusing to remove a necklace with a cross. You could have had a necklace, I'm quite certain, with any number of symbols on it, but no cross. Now, the fact is the cross is a pagan symbol. And we ought not be adorning ourselves with pagan symbols, but nonetheless, that is central to the mythical religion of Christianity. She was sent home because British Airways said you can't wear a necklace with a cross. And then she was fired. Devon-based nurse Ms. Chaplin was moved to a desk job by Royal Devon and Exeter NHS Trust Hospital, because she was wearing a cross, and then she was fired. Mr. McFarlane, a Bristol counselor, by the way, he was a Bristol counselor in a faith-based organization, not just working for a public, in a public job, was sacked by Relate after saying on a training course, during a training course, that he might have a conscientious objection to giving sex therapy advice to gay couples. Now, I'm here to tell you, I don't care what people do in their own home. Homosexuality is not one of my hot buttons. I really don't care. But I am here to tell you for certain that I would not be in a position where I could give sexual therapy counseling to a couple of gay guys. Not something I'm going to do. Yes, Scott.
I was just going to say the same thing. I was like, how? Wait, that doesn't make any sense.
No kidding. I can understand that the guy might have been sacked for saying that if he worked at an AIDS center for saying I'm not going to give a treatment to homosexuals, that would be one thing. Fire him. But to say that as a straight guy, forget about religion for a moment, it's really hard to imagine that, I know for certain I would not be qualified and would not find it a job that I would want to do to give sexual counseling to a couple of gay guys.
Well, so far, everything I've heard, the one guy is prying in on somebody's sex life, which, I mean, you can't really do that if you're going to be a counselor or anything like that. And then the person with the cross, if that's against the company's policy, I mean, they tell you in the policy, and usually you have to sign a form saying, you know, oh, I agree with these policies.
Actually, the company has a policy that says that you can wear a cross.
Oh.
Yeah. And this person wasn't objecting to anything other than he was being in a training course. And he says, you know, I think I might have an issue providing sex counseling to gay couples. It's just statement of truth. Miss Liddell was disciplined after she refused to conduct same-sex civil partnership ceremonies in North London. All right, so the court documents explains that Ms. Iwida and Mrs. Chaplin believe that UK law has failed adequately to protect their rights to manifest their religion. Now, I'm going to tell you, when I see somebody in religious garb, I don't care if they're wearing a cross, I don't care if they're wearing a scarf on their head, I don't care if they're walking down the street in a burqa, it offends me. It offends me. I find it, I look at the person and say, why would you do that to yourself? You know, if they're wearing a yarmulke, or the little black hat of the ultra-Orthodox Jews, I look at it and I look down my nose at them and say, you are so stupid. Why would you surrender to something that ridiculous? You think you're pleasing God and yet you are offending him. And so I look at it and say, I think it's repulsive, but it is your choice. If you want to commit spiritual suicide, it's your call. This is Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. We'll be back in a moment. Should you wish to call, 877-300-7645. Final segment of the news hour of Shattering Myths. The reason I shared this opening stanza of the story with you is not to determine whether or not these people should have been fired or not. It's the argument around them that I found interesting. Continuing with this article, it says that the court documents explain that Ms. Iwida and Ms. Chaplin believe that the UK law has failed to adequately protect their right to, quote, manifest their religion, which is contrary to Article 9 of the European Convention on Human Rights. You have the right in the UK and the right in the European Union to manifest your religion. Well, that would mean that every suicide bomber cannot be held accountable for perpetrating mass murder because they're manifesting the highest calling of their religion, which is the only guaranteed way to get into Allah's paradise, is to kill peaceful Muslims and non-Muslims on behalf of Allah. This article provides a right to freedom of religion, including to worship, teaching, practice, and observance of the elements of their faith. So when the Quran tells Muslims to go kill a person who rejects Islam, and the story that we just read with Zahra, if someone kills her, practicing and observing the elements of their religion, that person would be exonerated according to the UK and Article 9 of the European Convention on Human Rights. Those 19 suicide bombers who flew planes into our buildings screaming, Allahu Akbar, should they have survived the act, they would have been exonerated. They had the right to practice and observe their faith. When Adolf Hitler created Mein Kampf and the people's religion, according to the European Union, he would have every right to practice his religion, which was anti-Semitism. Andrew Marsh, campaign director at Religious Christian Concern, is a religious group, obviously, whose sister organization, which is the Christian Legal Center, is supporting Mrs. Chaplin and Mr. McFarlane. He told the BBC that the four could have had their beliefs respected by their employees without adversely affecting the people they serve. Now, I think this notion that we are to respect religion is grossly misleading, inappropriate. You ought not respect something that is as destructive as religion. You ought not respect things that are have a negative influence, that lead people astray. But that is what those who promote and apologize for political agendas and religious agendas always want you to do. You have to respect my religion. No, I don't respect your religion. I expose it. I condemn it. This is an interesting quote. The crucial question in these cases is this. Could these four individuals have been reasonably accommodated and their Christian faith respected without detriment or damage to the rights of others? And the answer to that question is clearly yes. Each of them could have been reasonably accommodated without there ever being any danger or risk, significant risk to others, or indeed of anyone who is entitled to a service being denied that service. Now, since we've already addressed respected, and we ought not respect things that are destructive, that are malignant, that are deadly, why is this notion, the second notion, that people are entitled to a service? You're not entitled to anything. I mean, God gave you three gifts. Man routinely takes them away and usurps them. But the three gifts that God gave us are mortal life, free will, and a conscience, an asoma, the ability to reason. But we're not entitled to anything. No, we live now in an entitlement culture. It's why so many nations, including the UK, the entire European Union, and the United States, are essentially bankrupt. Now, however, the National Secular Society, which campaigns against, quote, religious privilege. So we have entitlements, but yet religion is a privilege. Quote, they campaign against religious privilege, said a European court ruling in favor of the quartet would undermine the UK equality law. In other words, they have an agenda. Guess what their agenda is? We'll hear it in a moment. The society's director, Keith Portuas Wood, said that the group was fighting the action. We think that if it goes the wrong way, it will cause a hierarchy of right with religion at the top. And it's going to be bad news for employers and for gay people. Wow. Well, as we will continue in our program, we're going to learn that when you champion the wrong agenda, and when truth no matter matters, you're in a serious dilemma and myths prevail. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a...